just a big pleasure to welcome back, really a favorite here on GoldSeek.com Radio for many years, formerly of Institutional Advisors. Now he runs a new website with his one of his colleagues there, Bob Clark, if I'm not mistaken. And it's just a pleasure to welcome him back to the show on another volatile week in the markets. Hello, Bob.
Good to be with you, Chris, and also good to be with our listeners.
Looking into the blockchain and crypto stuff and things like that, the Bitcoin price thing, and then there was also one about from the Von Mises site about the Bank of England as one of the key central banks. So it's fascinating. I looked at the price of the Bitcoin trust thing here, and it's done the big crash thing and has been trying to stabilize since the first of the year. And my work on great bubbles, as you know, goes back a long ways. South Sea Bubble in 1720, that was the first great bubble. And the participants, you can say, invented it, and then everyone since has been similar. About 2 years, and the South Sea Bubble went from a base of about, this is just from memory, Chris, 90 pounds up to 1,000 pounds in June of 1720, and then crashed in the fall, and then into the next year was sort of trading about 120. So we call it the round trip, all the way up and all the way down. And the price action, I think, will trade with the big stock market on intermediate moves, you know, overbought to oversold and oversold to overbought.
I've done a little bit of, just a touch of correlation analysis with regarding Bitcoin, and I have to admit, I don't find it to be terribly accurate, meaning it changes the trends and themes behind the correlations don't seem to hold firm. But I think the key takeaways I was able to post on our webpage is there is a very strong correlation with U.S. shares. There's a much stronger correlation, negative correlation between the VIX, I believe it was, Bitcoin. So it seems to have its own beta, if you will. It moves quite independently against most markets. So
yeah, well, I looked at the chart over the last few years, but the main thing was is that the Bitcoin was, without a doubt, the most sensational group within a very huge financial bubble.
Mm.
And you recall that in early October 2017, I just sort of threw up my hands and said, well, I actually wrote that the whole world is going to get bubbled,
yeah,
even including the Dow Jones.
Yeah.
Then with that same edition, I think it was October the 5th, noted that many terrific speculations in the past had completed in the December-January window. So we said, okay, there's our target. This is where this is going to. And then on the December 19th, I think that will stay in my mind, is when we got a sequential sell on Bitcoin itself. And that, we hadn't had that signal in 2 years. So the little note was that we would get an equivalent decline. And then what happened is then we were using, still use, the New York Stock Exchange Composite Index, because it's the big one. And it set its high in January 2018. With Chris, it was immense momentum. Like the RSI got up to 89. was there, I thought, my God, this is for a big index. It's exceptional. So I looked back on the NASDAQ composite going into the blow-off in March of 2000, the dot-com bubble, which was, and it only got up to 84. So that was enough to say for us to suggest that this could be an important top of the whole bubble. It looks like it, Chris. You know, the other one is that all of the five great financial bubbles in history, that would be from the South Sea bubble in 1720 is number one, and 1929 is number five. All of them suffered heavy liquidity problems in the fall and typically cleared in November. But as we noted over the last year, that the 1825 bubble was late in crashing, and it, which this recent liquidity problem did kind of run its course at Christmas, and then we were looking for a rally out to March, which is what we have.
It's interesting you'd mention that, because we just spoke with our good friends at Charles Nenner Institute, David Gerwitz, Charles Nenner. They're convinced that every year that ends in a seven, and I know, you know, you gotta be careful with this type of thinking, but going all the way back to 1927, 37, 47, 56, 67, of course, everyone remembers 87. You can't forget the Asian flu of 97. 2007 led to 2008, 2009. And then he says 2017 led to the crash of 2018, late 2018.
I can add a little more history to that one. Rather than looking years of seven, the thing that I noticed 30 years ago was, and I mentioned that South Sea bubble, it had the peak in 1720, and prior to that, there had been a very big, long boom in commodity prices, and they peaked in 1711, so you had the nine-year thing. And then I noticed that in 1929, the huge peak in commodities was in 1920, so the nine-year thing. And then I found them for the bubbles in between. But this is an astonishing replication here, because we were able to get the a commodity index by the month for 1920. Hitherto, lucky to find a commodity index that's annual. So anyways, you got the one for monthly in 1920. And you count out the time to the peak of the stock market in September 1929, and it was 9 years and 5 months. So then with our most recent boom in the stock market, we looked and you had, without a doubt, a very huge commodity boom in 2008. Remember when crude was up to 147? And that was in June or July. And then you count out the months. And it comes out to 9 years and 7 months. Well, you know, the accuracy on a commodity index is kind of plus or minus a month anyways. So this is, to me, quite important that the typical bubble, financial bubble, peaked 9 years after a great bubble in commodities, and we've done it again here. Now, there are some things that are missing. Chris, the other thing is that because of the speculation in financial assets is so intense, it really propels the stock market. But if you look at decades and decades of stock market history outside of when you're in a bubble, the stock market typically peaked 10 to 12 months before the economy did. And this is why they have in the leading indicators the stock market.
The LEI, right.
Yeah, but if you look at financial bubbles, the peak in the stock market is virtually instantaneous with the peak in the, and we can outline this. The top of the bubble, the top of the economy. No lead, lag, just instantaneous. Take the, now the NBER keeps track of the recessions and expansions and all the way back to about 1857. So if you look at the bubble peak in 1873, the stock market in the U.S. peaked in September and the economy peaked in October. And then you went into a severe contraction. And then if you look at then the next bubble, 1929, the stock market peaked in September, which can be an ominous month, get it? The, according to the NBER, the business, that business expansion peaked in that fateful August. So within a month or two. So the probability is that this stock market peaked using the New York Stock Exchange composite in January of 2018. Now, also, there's a world stock index, ex-US, without the New York in it. It also peaked in that month. But then you had a sort of secondary rally where the S&P made a high in September. So I think it's easy to say that that was such a dynamic peak in the stock market, whether you're looking at January or stretching it out to September, that, and it was without a doubt a financial bubble. So past tells us that the economy's probably past its peak, as with the stock market. Now, what are the chances of, say, the Fed easing money yet even more? Or let's put it this way, what about if they cut interest rates and this rally coming out of December was based, part of the story was based upon that the Fed was not going to do any more rate increases, which is the equivalent, say they're going to cut rates. But that had nothing to do with it anyway. That was the story that was attached to it. The main thing is it was extremely oversold, and you're likely to get a rally out to March, which we have had. So here is the nub of it, Chris, is that short-dated interest rates like T-bills go up in yield with the boom, and then they go down in yield with the bust or the contraction. So what? If, and this was the irony in 2007 when in September I made one of my notes of the headlines then where some Wall Street person was saying not to worry because the Fed would have the perfectly timed rate cut and then the interest rate fell to zero. The theory that a perfectly timed Fed cut can keep a bull market going, let's backed up and say a bubble going, has not been borne out. Interest rates, short rates go up with the boom and they go down with the contraction. See, anything, the only thing that's kind of different out there is the corporate tax cuts and the bringing back of a lot of corporate money that was parked overseas and coming back into the U.S. But then you and I both have been reading, Chris, that a lot of that money went into buying the stock market on stock buybacks, kind of risky. So I don't see anything either policy-wise or cutting tax rates or U.S. corporate money coming back home that would provide some kind of a special bid that could turn this whole market up and launch it into a new bull market. It seems highly improbable to me.
To what do you attribute this interesting finding? Because I think you've given us a good idea, but why do you suppose that the market is so intricately attached or correlated to economic conditions?
In a financial mania, financial speculation is the big thing. So that pulls the economy up. And then when the speculation burns itself, players get exhausted, and then the power shifts over to Mr. Margin, then it contracts. But what to me is fascinating is the nine-year period from a big boom in commodities to the equivalent boom in financial assets. Now, here's the other thing on this.
Well, I'm just curious, what follows? We've had both of those things occur.
Yeah, so that's where I'm heading, Chris.
Yeah.
Because if you look at the boom in commodities, that is hoarding tangible assets.
And if you wouldn't mind, please tell people how they can find your website.
Oh, yeah, that's easier. I just set it up as bobhoy.com. So I'm just Bob Hoy, B-O-B-H-O-Y-E, and all the articles and how to get in there all comes up. It's impressive.
There's no hyperbole, I think, at all in noting we can't wait to hear your thoughts again in 2019.
Give us a call. Okay, Chris.
The blockchain revolution is transforming the global arena, disrupting every industry in its path. GoldSeek.com is excited to introduce an off-the-chain opportunity in digital gold and silver from our friends at Atmex and Sprott.com. One Gold holds physical gold and silver metals at the Royal Canadian Mint, the first online marketplace to offer secure and convenient buying, selling, and redemption of digital precious metals. One Gold uses Vault Chain, a secure, immutable blockchain ledger developed by Tradewind Markets, the leading innovator in digital precious metals distributed ledger and blockchain technology. Vault Chain. Gold and silver are 100% redeemable through One Gold for physical precious metals delivered to customers' doors in any size at competitive prices and low transaction storage costs. As a special offer and for a limited time only, One Gold is offering gold and silver at spot price with no additional premiums. OneGold.com is secure and accessible 24/7 on any device, offering convenient purchases and sales of precious metals. Easy recurring transactions make passive saving and gold dollar cost averaging as easy as a single mouse click. Vault Chain offers the best tier pricing on AppMex products, setting the industry standard as a fully backed physical asset with easy redemption in coins, rounds, or bars, offering clients peace of mind and full transparency. Don't get left behind. Remember to bookmark OneGold.com for the safest and most convenient digital precious metals today. Remember, OneGold.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.